Welcome into the NHL At The Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here and Sean Rourke out there. It is Tuesday. It's only a couple of hours before the Tampa Bay Lightning and Carolina Hurricanes are going to play. So anything we say about that, Sean, will be dated by the time people are listening to this. But there's still so much to talk about in the hockey world, right?
Oh, it's unbelievable. And, you know, it's finally hit me how late we're running in the playoffs this year. Before, it was just, you know, hey, let's do this, and it's the same as always. But Memorial Day comes, and that's the official start of the Stanley Cup Final. Almost every year we find ourselves in some city. And usually on that Monday, I spend a little time at the rink, spend a little time watching the lacrosse championship, which was epic this year. Unbelievable. 17-16, Virginia wins. And then, spend a little time reflecting on Memorial Day. And I had to do all that from my house instead of from a nice comfy hotel room where I could enjoy it by myself. So that's a little different. It made me realize how far behind we are and how far we still have to go. There's a ton of stories, but I think we all know what the biggest story is before we start round two. And that was the end of round one on Memorial Day evening. And the Toronto Maple Leafs lost again. And before we get into it, I just want to remind the loyal listeners, the ones that aren't dumping in for the first time for our guests, which are Mike Seisberger and Gary Wallace.
Here we go.
Is Dan Rosen said at the beginning of our little conversation about the Toronto Maple Leafs that they had finally figured it out. They were up 3-1. They had finally figured it out. They knew how to play playoff hockey, and everything was going to be all right. They might lose a game, but everything was going to be okay. They had the players that knew how to play playoff hockey, and then they went out, and they didn't play playoff hockey for three straight games. They played for exactly two periods, one in game five and one in game six to force overtimes, and then for maybe 5 minutes in game seven, and they're home for the summer again.
I'd like to hear a recording on that. I don't believe that was ever said.
Take your medicine like I took my McDavid medicine.
You're right. I got to take it. I got to eat the crow. I don't know what, you know, hindsight being what it is. I don't know what I was thinking, you know, like, honestly, it's happened again to the Toronto Maple Leafs. It happens time and again. And in a few moments here, we're going to have Mike Seisberger on, our colleague up in Toronto who knows this team backwards and forwards, and I got to give his eyes credit. He's been calling it all season long, right? I mean, he's been saying these things about the Leafs. Are they built to win? I don't know. Let's wait and see. They got a lot of guys with a lot of skill, but can they win in the playoffs? And man, you're up 3-1 against Montreal, a team you're supposed to beat. You got to put them away. You can't put them away in game five. Fine. You got to put them away in six. Can't do it. And then it wasn't barely a game in game seven. I mean, they didn't play a playoff game in game seven. They played game 15 of the regular season in game seven. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about them. Sean, I'll give you a word on it, then you can bring in Zeiss, because I'm sure you have one more word to say before we bring in Zeiss, who's got a lot of words to say on it.
Well, I just think, you know, there were two games that night, and the other game was the Boston-New York Islanders game, and they were staggered beautifully. So you could switch during the intermission and get almost a full period of the other game, and they were being played at two different speeds, right? Like, Montreal wanted to slow that game down. They wanted to slow Matthews and Marner down and all those guys. And you're right, that game was played at a back-to-back, second night in a second city speed, right, in the middle of November or December, and then you turn on the Bruins Islanders game, which was game two, and they were going at warp speed. It was like you're trying to fast forward, you know, through a Netflix show to find the one part that you left it at last time. That's how fast they were playing. And then it was stunning. You'd turn back and you'd be like, oh my God, like, this is just at a crawl, which is exactly what Montreal wanted. And then they got the lead, and then you just watched sticks turn into sawdust and guys just lose the plot, literally lose the plot right in front of you. And to me, I think that's the most concerning and the most damning thing. But we'll bring in Mike Seisberger, who covered that game, has covered the Toronto Maple Leafs forever, has been through all the heartbreaks that they've gone through. And maybe he can put this one in perspective. I think this might be the worst one of all. What do you think, Mike?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, guys. And you know, I got to say, to Dan's point, I'm not going to rub it in, because even before, you know, I was privileged to join the NHL.com family. You know, I've known Dan for a while. And I got to say, for somebody from a non-hockey country, he's one of the most educated guys I've ever ran into. So, but you know, joking aside, was I joking?
I don't know. I don't know. I count 24 teams, though. 25.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. When the Rangers went out, was that when the Rangers didn't make the playoffs, was that on the radio for 25 hours a day?
No, that 20, was not.
25 and a half in Newfoundland? No, but guys, that's, you know, here's the thing. And it was the same thing at the beginning of the season when I saw a lot of the prognosticators saying this team, the ads that the Maple Leafs made, they are a Stanley Cup contender. And I can understand that because, you know, I finally thought that Kyle Dubas went away from the all skill thing. He brought in some grit. I loved, you know, flipping TJ Brody for Tyson Barry. It wasn't a trade, obviously, but they replaced each other on the roster. I thought that made them better defensively. You know, they got a lot because of their so pushed against the cap, you know, to bring in a Thornton, to bring in a Simmons, to bring in a Bogosian. I just thought those were guys with a little bit of pedigree and that they could play, you know, once the playoffs came around, they could play more of that playoff type game. But at the same time, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say they're a Stanley Cup contender because how do you say that somebody's going to run before they can even walk, or in this case, crawl? This team has not won a playoff series since 2004. Okay. So let's rewind. 2004, they still use the red line to measure the two-line pass. That's how long that has been, okay? And they are now 0-8 in series clinching games since then. 0-8? I mean, they didn't even fluke one in there. So, you know, you look at this core. Now we go to the core. And this is where they are just getting scorched by the fandom. Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Morgan Rielly, and Zach Hyman's in there too, but William Nylander. These guys have been to the playoffs 5 consecutive years and have not won a series. So you can talk about how talented they are. You know, they're all, I got to say, they're all good guys. They're all stand-up guys. But I'm not going to pick you to be a Stanley Cup contender if you haven't even shown me you can win one series. And I'll end this rant with this, and there's a lot more rants to come. I mean, no offense to the Columbus Blue Jackets and no offense to the Montreal Canadiens, but when it comes to God-given talent that is accrued on your roster, okay, the Toronto Maple Leafs are more than marginally ahead of those two teams and could not beat them. Over to you, Dan.
Everything you say is right. I don't know how anybody could argue with it. I mean, Austin Matthews in games in a series scored one goal. Mitch Marner in the series did not score a goal. Now, Willie Nylander had 5. That's good. But in games 5, 6, and 7, when it really mattered, Matthews, 2 assists, no goals. Marner, 1 assist, obviously no goals since he didn't score one in the series. There are so many questions here, Zies, and I mean, it's almost like you don't even know where to begin, but I'll begin right at the top, and you tell me your opinion. This team was built by Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas. Are those guys safe?
If they are, I'm not sure they should be. It's a little head-scratching to me this year, Dan, because every year that they've fallen short, I could point to certain aspects and say, well, they have to get grittier. They got to be better on defense. Yada, yada, yada. They need more sandpaper. They need more veteran leadership in the dressing room. And I thought Dubas did a hell of a job addressing those points last offseason. So, you know, when it comes to, you know, you sit there and do the autopsy of what just happened, for the first time, I have more questions than answers. But this is you know, when it comes down to it, they did a great job addressing those things, sure. But this is a results-orientated business. And I have not – last year was the angriest that I've seen – that I've ever seen the fan base. This year, they've taken it up a notch, but that's sprinkled with of disgust and disdain. Mm. And I, you know, people were just, they couldn't believe it. And so now you know, this is Brendan Shanahan's, you know, and I like Brendan a lot. Very, very smart hockey guy. This was the Shanahan plan. Okay. He brought in, he elevated Dubas. He brought in Sheldon Keefe, who I think is a very good coach. But again, when you look at the body of work that these guys have done, and it's great in the regular season, they have won nothing, including the past two series in which they had a much more talented team, again, in my opinion. And I'm going to throw this last thing in here, and Leaf fans will cringe about this, okay? In 2018, up until 2018, okay, Lou Lamoriello was the general manager, and then Mark Hunter, who I think is a brilliant hockey guy, he's with the London Knights right now, and Kyle Dubas were the assistant GMs. Shanahan decided it was time that Kyle Dubas got elevated to the GM spot. Mark Hunter, obviously, we knew he wasn't going to stick around, so he went back to London. You know, they wanted to put Lou in an advisory capacity, and we all know that is something I'm interested in. That's a bad Lou, but what can I say? At least he talks to me. Other reporters can't make that claim. But guys, since they decided to do that, Lou Lamoriello, who in 2018 saw the captain join the New York Islanders as their GM, saw their longtime captain, John Tavares, go to the Leafs, the team that he had left, signed a couple of guys in Matt Martin and Leo Komarov, who were deemed not part of the Leafs' future. And Lou and those two guys, with a great coach, Barry Trotz, have won four playoff series since he got to the island. And they're tied 1-1 with the Bruins right now. And just as a reminder, Dan, how many series have the Maple Leafs won in that time?
Zero.
That would be correct.
Well, let me play devil's advocate here for a minute, and I'm not going to make any excuses for the Toronto Maple Leafs, but which team do you want to have going forward? Do you want to have the Toronto Maple Leafs with Marner and Matthews and that core, or do you want to have the New York Islanders with Barzal and that core? I mean, I think you can lay a lot of things on the feet of whoever you want to lay them on, but in building the core, I think Toronto's done a good job. I think some of the issues are, you know, in how they've surrounded them. And this year, you know, they go out and they get Joe Thornton and they bring Spezza back, you know, after they debated it for a while. And Jason Spezza was the best player in that series against Montreal. So there's your biggest problem right there. Good on Jason Spezza, but bad on everybody else. But then you look at the Montreal Canadiens, and who beat the Maple Leafs? It was their imports. It was Corey Perry, who was all washed up,
yep.
Couldn't get a job after he ran amok in Dallas last year in the playoffs. You know, it was Tyler Toffoli. It was guys that had a winning pedigree, you know. So it seems to me that one team picked the past winners better than the other team, because that's kind of what it came down to. A lot of the rest of it was, you know, there wasn't much to separate these two teams. And when the brass tacks came out, the guys who had won stepped to the fore. And I don't think you can learn that, right? You have to experience it. It's not something I can't tell you how to do it. You have to go and experience it. And Austin Matthews is 23 years old, unless my calendar's wrong. He's got a hell of a lot of hockey ahead of him, and he's got a hell of a lot of heartbreak behind him. And I look at Mitch Marner, and I look at how nervous he looked, and it shouldn't be at this point, but I looked at how nervous he looked in some of those games. But these are lessons that are going to be learned, and these are lessons that are going to serve them well going forward. And if they ever do figure it out, you know, they're going to be the guys that are going to be like the Corey Perrys and the Toffolis that have that experience and have that heartbreak. So, you know, I think it would be different if Austin Matthews was 28 years old, and I'm not trying to varnish what is just a horrendous exit, but it's not the end of the road here.
Well, no, I agree with you, but if you lived here, you would think that is it. I think where people are cynical, Sean, is the fact that you say, well, what did they learn from it? Well, but we've heard that for five consecutive years. And it was funny because, you know, as they went into game seven, Morgan Riley was asked on one of the Zooms, what have you learned from the previous game sevens? Well, I just kind of shook my head and said, well, you know what? You could have asked them the first time they lost to the Bruins, and then the second time they lost to the Bruins, and then when they lost to Columbus. So what happened? Did it look to you in game seven like they had learned anything after all these times going to the dance? Look, I'm not by no means am I saying I don't think, you know, they're not going to get rid of Matthews. I think it would be a mistake to get rid of Marner, because I remember Jimmy Devolano, I think it was 3 years ago, back when we actually could go to games, sitting in the Air Canada, it was the Air Canada Center at the time, Scotiabank Center now, or Arena now. But we were watching a game, and Marner had been taking some heat at the time. I remember Jimmy D looking over at me and he said, you know, I don't understand why people in this town want to get rid of, you know, Marner or one of these guys. He said, the Leafs have two of these franchise guys. Do you know how badly we would like just to have one guy like that? So that's why I think it would be a mistake to get rid of Marner. And he's not a guy, you know, the reason he was nervous is because he cares. Now they're going to have to work that out. But again, you know, what do you do, Sean? I mean, I just told you the 5-4 guys that they have, and they're 0-5. They're 0-7 in games where they could clinch. 0-7. So look, I know how long it took for Ovi to have playoff success. Steve Yzerman may be the best example of that. I mean, there were talks of him getting traded before Detroit decided to keep him, and they went on to win eventually a dynasty with all those Stanley Cups. But again, this is the head scratching thing right now. Where do you go with this team? Your two best players, your two highest paid players did not produce when you needed them to. Your general manager probably did the best job on paper of bringing in guys last offseason that I think we've seen with the Maple Leafs. But, you know, right now, and you know, you have to keep emotion out of it. But these fans, and you guys know how Looney Tunes these people are up here, I mean, they just feel spent. They feel that they've been punched in the gut so many times, you know, that enough is enough. And I know you can't listen to the fans, but I, like I said, I don't know. It's just, it's crazy here. The emotions are high. You don't want to make a move in the organization based on emotions. We all know, all three of us know that that doesn't work. But then what do you do? I mean, do you let Shanahan go? Do you let Dubas go, who you thought actually, you know, a lot of us thought actually did a good job? I mean, we think that Sheldon Keefe is a good coach, but if the GM goes, does his handpicked coach go as well? I personally don't think that anything's going to happen with Shanahan or Dubas or Keefe, but you know, I've been wrong before. But it's just it's head scratching to me, and I'm not sure. Maybe you guys from the outside looking in, you know, might have some suggestions on where this ship gets steered, but it's very, very perplexing. And the biggest thing for me last night, guys, is that I didn't see any emotion. And I think that is the most concerning thing. It's one thing they didn't skate. You know, they arguably played easily the worst game of the playoffs, but some people are calling it the worst game of the year. But how do you not show any emotion in game seven?
Yeah. look, it is head scratching. I want to pause here for a second. Just we're talking to Mike Zeisberger, our staff writer up in Toronto, obviously about the Maple Leafs and the fallout. We're going to have Gary Lawless on in a little while as well to talk about the Vegas Golden Knights. Gary's a Vegas Golden Knights insider, and Zeis, you know Gary very well, obviously. But let's get back to it. So where do they go from here? You're not trading Matthews. I don't think you trade Marner. You obviously need to address the goaltending. The goaltending is the number one thing that you absolutely have to address, because who's going to be your starting goalie next year? Is it going to be Jack Campbell? Well, all right, but who's the other guy? You know, you got to have to address that situation. There is a laundry list of potentially pending UFAs on this team, and a lot of it, Zeis, is the guys that they brought in to help get this team over the hump. Right. I mean, we're talking Simmons, Foligno, Galchenyuk, Spezza, Thornton, Bogosian, right? Mm-hmm. Anderson, Rittich, Hyman. I mean, Riley Nash, obviously, too. It's a huge list of pending UFAs. So here's what if I'm Kyle Dubas and I'm Brendan Shanahan, I'm saying to myself, all right, so what we just did didn't work, right? Let's not overreact. We have our guys. Can we finally say to them, say to Austin Matthews, say to Mitch Marner, and yes, Tavares is there, and that was a big loss, obviously. But can we finally say to these guys, let's stop insulating them with these veteran presence, you know, know-it-all type of players, and Joe Thornton and Jason Spezza, who can handle some of the heat and take, you know, all that stuff. They are our front and center guys. They need to be our leaders, our core leaders, and they have to be wearing letters, and they have to be the number one guys all the time. And maybe don't show emotion or a lot of emotion because, you know, they've been insulated for so long by other guys. Let's stop doing that. And let's just build a team around them with the pieces that they need around them, rather than bringing in the 38, 39 year old veteran who's been around so long. And he's the sage wise old guy who can help him out. Do you agree with that, Zeis? I mean, can we just finally put these guys out front and center and say, boys, it's your team. We're going to build around you with younger pieces, veteran pieces, you know, guys who, you know, who can really help accentuate your game and play the style of playoff hockey we need.
But Dan, before this year, other than Spezza last year, they did that. Okay. They didn't, they were one of the youngest teams in the league, and they tried to do that. And they went for skill. They had, Kapanen was, Kasperi Kapanen was here, and a bunch of guys like that. And I understand those aren't the guys to surround them with, but
right.
All of a sudden you're pushed up against the cap right now. They have three draft picks in this next draft, three, because they mortgaged everything pretty much on this season or the last couple of seasons. I think you free up some money by not bringing Anderson back. I think he's as good as gone, and they have a lot of confidence in Campbell. I think that he's going to be their guy, but they want to re-sign Zach Hyman. Morgan Riley, I believe, comes up after next season. Where does that money come from?
They got to trade one. They got to trade Nylander. They got to they got to trade somebody.
Yeah,
they have to trade somebody.
Yeah. But then, okay, so then you trade one of the, you know, what? Okay, so let's say you trade a Nylander or a Marner, and then you get more money. But then you're very thin up front for a team that every time they get into a series down the stretch, more often than not, can't score. Last year against Columbus in game 5, they got shut out. They almost got shut out last night again. Would have made a better story, by the way. I had to delete that on my computer. Like, they would have got shut out in back-to-back games, in deciding games. That was too good, you know? I knew it was too good to last. But, you know, then you thin it out there. And I agree with you, Dan. I just think that, you know, now it gets to the point where you're going to have to rely a lot on a Rasmus Sandin and a Nick Robertson. The young guys coming up, we'll have to say you made a great point that the Canadians from the bargain bin to pick up a Corey Perry You know, Corey Perry was far more effective than a Wayne Simmons or guys like that. But it's just they kind of painted themselves in a corner. And if they trade one of those guys to free up cap space, it'll be interesting how they allot that. But, you know, they had to do a lot of cap juggling this year just to get all those guys in there. And it's going to be fascinating how they do this juggling act next year.
Well, we could talk about this forever. I mean, it's one of the great topics in the history of hockey. And someday,
by the way, Sean, they are here talking about it forever.
Oh, yeah. But we're not.
We are not.
And we're not. This is our allocated space for this segment. But it's something we're going to revisit, you know, when draft comes and free agency and next year. Like it's the gift that keeps on giving. And that is a beautiful thing. But for now, with all the other stuff that's going on in the playoffs, I think we're going to wrap here. And let me just make one more point that we've all skipped over. The Toronto Maple Leafs decided to go to war with a guy in goal who, no offense to him, played his seventh game in game seven of this playoffs. And standing across from him is one of the greatest goaltenders of this generation. And that, in any playoff series, that's going to tip the balance. And I understand that Freddie Anderson was hurt and everything else, but this idea that the teams were equal in the most important areas, they were far from equal in the most important areas. So I just wanted to get that in before we let you go, Zyes, and we'll have you on again soon. And maybe we'll find something else besides the Maple Leafs to talk about.
Well, you know what? I used to, for the previous 10 years before joining NHL.com, I did the, I covered the entire league and I still do a little bit. Maybe that's why I become so cynical about the Toronto Maple Leafs, because I see how it's done in other places. And the fact that when other teams play in May and June, it's not because the pandemic has pushed the schedule back.
Oh, we'll end it there, Zyes. Thanks for joining us. All right.
Thanks, guys. And listen, you and your families, be safe and healthy and all the best. We'll talk soon.
Love the emotion that Zyes brings when he talks about the Toronto Maple Leafs, and cynical, if you will, fine. But I mean, he's seen it all. Like you said at the top, the heart, he's seen all the heartbreak, Sean. So how could you not be cynical at this point after seeing it happen again? But like you brought it up, Carey Price was such a huge factor. Like he's such an enormous factor. And we could talk all we want about Matthews and Marner and all that. He was so in their heads. And it was not even funny. I definitely thought he was in their heads once Gallagher scored and made a 1-0. And Gallagher even said, like, we got a goal. All right, we're good. We got Carey, you know?
Yeah.
That's what he does.
It's the same thing that happened in Edmonton. And I think the situations are so parallel, right? You got the two big guys that run the whole thing. And, you know, the questions are always about what surrounds them. And then, you know, you go to war against the Vezina Trophy winner with 39-year-old Mike Smith. And you know, you could say in the regular season that goaltending's not important and that you can run a platoon, and a lot of teams are doing that. But think about all the teams who are sitting home right now that lost the goaltending battle, and that's the reason they're out. Pittsburgh, Edmonton, Toronto.
Yep.
Like, to me, those are Washington. The big three. Washington, yeah. Like, those series were even, and the goaltenders weren't even. And
Florida.
And that's and that's the end, right? And
yeah,
Florida went with a rotation in the playoffs.
Yeah, three.
So, you know, to me, that's just it. But look, it's a religion, and I understand that. It's a religion in Toronto. Yeah. It's a religion in Montreal. And I thought that was what made the series so special, is how invested everybody was. Again, it's unfortunate that the buildings couldn't be full, and that's going to happen soon. You know, hopefully as we get into next year, and in a lot of places in the States, it's already full, and you can tell the difference. You know, you watch that Boston game and it was absolutely crazy. But, you know, and now, you know, we talked about it and I talked about each of those goalies. We go into the next series, the Scotia North final, and it's the reigning Vezina Trophy winner against Carey Price. And, you know, today was the first day the Jets could talk about who their opponent was after they've sat around for 7 days playing eeny, meeny, miny, mo. And you know, Blake Wheeler was like, we feel like we get Connor a goal, we're good. They feel like they get Carey a goal, they're good. He's like, that's going to be the whole series. Like, that's what it's going to come down to is who cracks first, who blinks first. And, you know, I know a lot of people love 5-4 games in the playoffs. There's nothing wrong with a 2-1 game in the playoffs with two goalies just playing lights out. And I think that's what you're going to get out of this series. The one thing that scares me a little bit is, you know, I know Connor can handle the workload. He loves it. I'm not so sure about Carey Price, who's coming in on short rest.
Yeah, he's coming in on short rest. They do have Jake Allen, so that'll be interesting as well. I mean, you saw Robin Lehner, and we'll talk to Gary Lawless about this in a little bit. You saw Robin Lehner start game one of the Vegas series after Marc-Andre Fleury played a tough 7-game series. That didn't work out, obviously, for Vegas, but, you know, there is the Jake Allen effect, that factor there. Quickly on this series, before we do turn to Gary and talk a lot about Vegas and Colorado, Sean, I think it's going to be low scoring. Like you said, you got two great goaltenders here. You got two teams that can muck it up with you. I mean, you know, they can, but there's just a little bit more firepower on the Jets end. And I say more fire, there was more firepower on the Maple Leafs end too. But the difference is the Jets have also what I thought the Maple Leafs were going to have, that ability to muck it up a little bit, grind a little bit, and that playoff experience will be a factor, I think, here. So it's just, I got to give Winnipeg an edge here just simply because they do have the more firepower, but they can also play that other type of playoff game. The one thing with Montreal is they got a lot of big guys and they've got experience too. And now they're kind of feeling it, you know, like they're kind of feeling it here. They're thinking to themselves, with a surprise team, nobody saw it happening. No, you had nothing to lose here except the series. I hate it when people say you have nothing to lose. You have a series to lose. But, you know, they have that underrated aspect coming in, I think.
Yeah, well, they're highly underrated. In our predictions, 15 people picked, all 15 people picked Winnipeg to win in the second round. It was the
how much the Carey Price factor matters to us.
it was the only one that was that lopsided. But it was that lopsided the other way in the first round. It was all Toronto. Everybody that picked Toronto. So to me, again, you know, you look at certain things in the playoffs and look, I think Sheldon Keefe's a good coach. We went over that a little bit with Zeisberger. I think Paul Maurice is a great coach, and I think he showed that against the Edmonton Oilers. And I think that they're going to have a huge advantage on Dominic Ducharme. Mm-hmm. Nothing against Dominic, but this is his first playoffs. And you know, Paul Maurice has been around the block enough times to get 10,000 steps easily. And, you know, to me, that's a huge, huge advantage. And I think the players in the room know it, right? When you start to exploit matchups and you start to be able to, every time you want to have your guy against their guy and you're able to get it, hockey players are pretty smart and they start looking and they're like, we're getting crushed here on the matchups. So I think that's a huge advantage for Winnipeg.
Yeah. I definitely think that is an advantage. But another reason why I'm giving it to them. So, all right, that's enough on that North Division. We've talked enough about it. Let's get to our second guest here. He's Gary Lawless. We'll call him Vegas Golden Knights Insider, writes for the website, on the radio, does TV, does just about everything. Gary, I know you're in your hotel room in Denver right now. How is Denver and how are the Vegas Golden Knights after game one?
Denver has been kind of gloomy the last couple of days, but you know, yesterday was kind of a full day of rest, which really the whole organization needed. Friday night in Vegas, a game 7, you know, an emotional, tough, grinding series against the Wild. Get up, get on the plane, come here Saturday, and then play Sunday night and against a buzzsaw Avalanche team. They were ready and waiting, licking their chops, and full marks to them. They were tremendous. The Golden Knights were not. It really actually goes to underscore what a smart coaching move it was to not play Marc-Andre Fleury because, you know, listen, Leonard hadn't played since May 3rd. He didn't have a chance, but they lost 7-1. They were going to lose 4-1 or 5-1 with Fleury. They were going to lose that game no matter what. Playing Fleury in that game would have wasted the opportunity to rest him and get him fresh. Because if Vegas is going to beat Colorado, this reminds me a lot of the Western Conference final in 17-18. Winnipeg was a big, fast team, a ton of speed, and Marc-Andre Fleury, he stole games 3 and 4 in Vegas. He was tremendous. Think of those. Mark Scheifele had chances in both of those games to really turn the tide, and Flower turned him away. So I thought DeBoer was smart not to play Fleury on Sunday. And now the big question is, you know, how much better can the rest of the Golden Knights be, and how much of an impact can Fleury have?
See, this is why we had Gary on in the first place, because everybody was ready to kill Peter for his decision. And Gary comes on and actually makes a logical choice for why it should have been the way it was. But I'm curious, you've seen these two teams play 8 times this year. And for the casual fan who tunes in and throws their arms up and says, oh, boy, the gap between these two teams is huge. And it was in that particular game. How close is the gap been this year between those two teams?
It's actually 3 teams. It's Minnesota, Vegas, and Colorado. There is very little to pick from those 3 teams. They are all very good, all have outstanding goaltending. Regular season, Vegas won 40 games more than anyone else, and they lost the President's Trophy on a tiebreaker to Colorado. And Minnesota was right in the hunt to the very end. Grubauer and Flower are both Vezina Trophy candidates. They've got, you know, the defense in Colorado, Norris type guys in Makar, and you know, Devin Taves was outstanding. Sam Girard, I love Ryan Graves. I think he's got that great mix of violence and talent that we don't see very much of anymore in the NHL. Vegas has Petrangelo and Theodore. I think there's probably a little more speed up front for the Avalanche. Vegas can counter that. They beat the season series was, I think it was 4-3-1 for Colorado. Like an overtime game was different. So thin edge of the wedge here between these two teams. But arrested. Man, Colorado, full week off. And, you know, that's tip of the cap to them. They won. So they got St. Louis, who was nowhere near the competition that Minnesota was. And so they were able to sweep them and get fresh and get healthy. And instead, Vegas waged a war and limped into Colorado. The schedule maker did them a favor. The Nuggets are playing at home tonight at Ball Arena. Otherwise, Vegas is playing right now or later this afternoon, and that wouldn't be to their advantage.
So now let's look at that, because that's going to be the interesting thing to me. Like you said, Colorado was coming out like a buzzsaw in game one. They were rested. They were ready to go. Vegas was coming in off of game 7. So now how much of a difference do you think can a rested Vegas team make in slowing down the fastest team on earth, really? I mean, this team is ridiculously fast. So how do they, can a rested Vegas team make an impact to slow down this Avalanche team enough to control the pace and control the play of the game?
Well, Vegas, I don't think they want to slow the game down for themselves. I think they want to make the Avalanche defend, and they don't want to make it easy for them and turn the puck over at the offensive blue line. Just, you know, if you watch the game, Vegas had a little bit of energy early on, and they actually had some scoring chances and did some good things. And then Rantanen gets, it's a good goal. It shouldn't go in. It's a backhander from the circle. Leonard would like to have that one back. And I think that whatever emotion Vegas had manufactured for the start of that game, I think that just went right out of their sails. We'll find out. You know, the other thing too is Jared Bednar and his staff spent the last week watching Minnesota and Vegas and prepping for them. Well, Golden Knights, all their focus was on Minnesota. Mm-hmm. It's just there's so many things that you are at a disadvantage to in that first game as a result of having to go 7 while they were in a sweep. Well, now DeBoer and his staff would have spent all day yesterday, you know, going over tape and looking at Colorado and trying to figure things out and changing their strategy. We just had a Zoom call with them, and I asked them, you know, what's the process like? And he talked a lot about how much fun that part of coaching is for them, is that they've now they've really worked on a game plan and now and trying to give it to the players. And it has to match your players as well for them to be able to execute it. It's a two-pronged thing. What do we need to do? And what can we do? And how do we put that together based on the talent that we have and the players that we have, and then give it to them and then try and have them execute it? So that's the huge question for tomorrow night is, can the Golden Knights close the gap?
And in order to do that, when I look at the series, Shea Theodore has to be the Shea Theodore of last year, and so far he hasn't. Do you have a theory on what the difference has been?
Well, Minnesota made it really hard on the Golden Knights defensemen. They got on top of them and they hit them. That was a war. This matchup is more suited to Shea Theodore and Alex Pietrangelo and all the Golden Knights defenders. They, you know, their forwards are going to have to do a better job of when. What we saw a lot of in game one, the Golden Knights defenseman would go in the corner, get the puck, move it up the wall, and it would go right to a waiting Avalanche defender. They're going to have to find a way, and then they'd go D to D, and then they'd go high to low, and there'd be somebody in front of the net, and they'd have a scoring chance, and sometimes it went in. So that breakout, they're going to have to do they're going to have to figure out another way to break the puck out, because that's not going to work. And the forwards are going to have to be really involved in helping out when Theodore or Pietrangelo or Holden or whoever, when they move it up the wall, that puck has to go to one of their players, not to the Avalanche, because the Avalanche, it's like a turnover, and that's like putting a log in their fire. That gives them in zone transition, and they're tremendous at it.
Gary, I wanted to go back to the end of the regular season. So when Vegas doesn't get the top seed, you obviously are very in tight with all these guys. And you have some inner workings. I mean, did they acknowledge, or did you think they were acknowledging how much of a challenge it would be for them because they didn't get that one seed? That almost like foreshadowing, like foretold what was going to happen here, a real hard series with Minnesota. And if they were able to get through it, you'd have Colorado kind of just waiting. Like, did Pete DeBoer kind of expect this, do you think, when they didn't get the one?
No, I think they've known for a long time. And St. Louis looked like they were going to be a much more competitive team until, like, you cannot underscore how big a blow losing David Perron was for them. It changed their team in a lot of ways. I think that everyone thought that the first two rounds were going to be extremely tough, and whoever walks out of the West Division, if they're healthy, is going to have a chance to win the Stanley Cup. There's this theory out there that this is the Stanley Cup. I don't believe that for a second. I think the Boston Bruins are tremendous. I think Tampa's tremendous. And, I'm really interested to see if the Jets can beat the Canadians, because if they can, they get a little bit of confidence and Connor Hellebuck starts to feel real good about himself. They could be a hard out in the next round as well. So, hindsight is 20/20. It would have been way better to play St. Louis. For Colorado to what DeBoer did say a number of times, Dan, was we want to get the easiest path. They didn't get the easiest path. They had to play the three seed instead of the four seed. And the three seed, it turns out, was way better than the four seed. And that cost them game one for sure. If they can rebound, we'll find out. But not winning the President's Trophy or not winning the West Division, that cost the Vegas Golden Knights game one for sure.
I have to ask you this after watching that Minnesota series for seven games. The real question was, everybody knew how good Kaprizov was. He's probably going to be rookie of the year, but the playoffs are a different animal. What do you think of him in that series and being a key as to what Vegas, a very good team, wanted to shut down? I mean, out of all the rookies I've seen recently, he seemed to answer as well as any of them.
Yeah, he was a good player. He didn't start scoring until I think he got on the board in five and six, and which was to help force game seven. But he's not light. Everyone thinks of him as a speedster. He's not a light guy. He's like Jonathan Marchessault with a couple extra gears. in terms of skating and thickness. So I think he's going to be a very good playoff player in the beginning. Now he's seen it, because we all know it's a completely different animal. But it's really hard to figure out why some guys go at this time of the year and some guys don't. I don't know why Austin Matthews doesn't go at this time of the year, because he's not a light guy. Like Ben Chiarot tried to hit him last night in front of the Montreal net, and Matthews had a second to brace himself and kind of put a little, he knocked Ben Chiarot on his can. And you know, I'm surprised that he hasn't figured out a way to play at this time of the year. Kaprizov is going to figure it out. Well, he did for parts of the series, and he's just going to get better and better. Minnesota is going to be a hard out for years to come.
How much different is Vegas if Janmark can't play and we know Reeves is not going to play?
Well, I think they have with Reeves, you know, they can replace him with Keegan Kolesar. Mm-hmm. Janmark is a tougher replacement because, you know, Vegas knew what their top six was at the trade deadline, and they, you know, they were comfortable with that. They thought they needed to add a guy to play with Nick Waugh and Alex Tuck to make that line really hum. And that didn't happen. You know, maybe this is what I might think about if I was Pete DeBoer. I might play Kolesar with Waugh and Tuck, and then have Brown and Carrier, and I might go 11-7 and add Dylan Coughlin and have an extra D to help and try and counteract what happens with that speed, and then double shift Tuck and play him a lot more. So it'll be interesting to see what DeBoer does. Alex Tuck, DeBoer, I asked DeBoer a while ago about going 11-7, and he said, well, you got to have the right guy for it. And when I was in New Jersey, I had Kovalchuk, mm-hmm. and he was the right guy for it. The guy has to be a horse, and Tuck is that kind of player. So we'll see. That would be a thought for me. Dylan Coughlin would be the guy you would add in. He's a lot more like the young defenseman in Colorado. Hasn't played as much as them, but he's got great first pass. He's got a bomb from the point, and he can skate, and he's thick.
I'm going to change gears on you really quickly here. You talked a little bit about Winnipeg and if they can beat Montreal and what a challenge they would be. But I'd be remiss if I don't go back to your roots there. You spent a lot of time in Winnipeg. Can you just talk about how special that series was for Winnipeggers? I mean, it's unfortunate that they couldn't be in the building, but that's a rivalry unlike many, and it's not celebrated anymore. I would imagine that has to be among the all-time series wins in Winnipeg history.
Yeah, well, for all the people that lived in Winnipeg and grew up with those great Jets teams in the 80s that had to face the Oilers and the Flames, and, you know, just couldn't get through those teams very often. You know, Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier and everybody else that they had in Edmonton, and then like Jamie McCowan putting a vicious hit on Dale Hawerchuk. Just, you know, those, a lot of ghosts got exercised, or demons got exercised for Jets fans by beating the Oilers, because I think they started to think maybe, oh my God, we had this good team that couldn't get through Gretzky. Well, now I've got this good team and it's not going to be able to get through McDavid. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, for them to knock out the Oilers in the fashion they did, I still have a place in Manitoba that we go to in the summer. And I lots of friends and follow all the Twitter accounts of all the hockey folks up there. And, you know, that they were saying this might have been the biggest win in franchise history, the biggest playoff win. So I'm not sure I agree with that, because it's only the first round. Like, beating Nashville and getting the Western Conference final was obviously pretty big. But because of that rivalry that's there, let's put it this way. it felt really good for a lot of people in Manitoba.
And now they're in the same position, right? I mean, the last one for me, they're in the same position as Colorado was in. They swept, they wait, they watch the team go seven games, come back, and they should come out flying in game one, and they should be the better team. I mean, do you think the Jets in this position are licking their chops now?
It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if Dom Ducharme and Mark Bergevin, if they decide to go with Jake Allen in game one. Now, they flew from Toronto last night to Winnipeg. They got to Winnipeg last night. The Habs did. So today they would have done nothing. You know, they wouldn't have gone on the ice. It would have been a complete day of rest. You know, Carey Price, a little younger than Marc-Andre Fleury, and you know, not as many miles on him recently because he hasn't gone deep in the playoffs in quite a while. So, you know, maybe it's a different situation, and maybe they feel they can't afford to not try and have Price steal a game. But, you know, for Vegas, I really think their belief was come to Colorado and get a split and then get back to T-Mobile Arena. Going to be 18,000 plus in T-Mobile on Friday night and Sunday as well. There's no restrictions anymore in Nevada. So they're about to get that huge edge back at home. So it'll be interesting to see the decisions that they make in Montreal. I actually thought the Leafs were a better matchup for the Jets. There's some beef on that Habs blue line that might make it tough. Shea Weber is gonna, you know, do his very best to make it hard on Mark Scheifele and Nick Ehlers and Ben Chiarot. This is the Ben Chiarot Bowl. You know, he wanted to re-sign in Winnipeg. Montreal offered a little bit more money. He said to the Jets, you know, I want to stay, but this is what they want to pay me. And they weren't able, unfortunately, they weren't able to match it. And then, you know, a couple months later, Dustin Byfuglien says, see you later, and retires. And it was like losing Chiarot was the true punch in the gut over that whole Byfuglien deal. And now here he is coming back. He's an original. He's a Thrasher, right? He's a Thrasher draft pick who, you know, paid his dues climbing up in the American League to get to that opportunity to play in Winnipeg. And he wanted to stay.
Well, Gary, thank you, because you just gave me my headline for NHL.com Game 1, the Ben Chiarot Bowl. I'm sure that's going to drive everybody right into the Game 1 preview. But we really appreciate you joining us. I know it's busy there, and there's a lot to do in Denver. So to take a couple minutes to join us is great. And for those listening, tune in. I know the TV is over, and I'm going to miss Lawless and Order a lot. But there's still radio and podcasts and everything else that you do. So keep up the good work with the Knights.
We do Lawless and Order, the radio edition, in the first period. Well, we do it all the time. We do radio. This is the trade secret. It's my rehearsal. I do Lawless and Order, the radio edition, in the first intermission, and then I go downstairs and I do it with Millard on TV in the second intermission. So if something, if I don't like the way something pans out on the radio, I tweak it a little bit. It's actually, we're right, the NBC guys, Eddie O, Bush, and Kenny Albert are close by, and we got to hear some Edzo stories on Sunday night after the game. Social distancing in the lobby, and it was some very funny stuff. So some Rangers stories about Mike Keenan, and it was really fun.
Good stuff, Gary. You're a professional, my friend. You get all the tricks of the trade down. You rehearse, and then you go back out on TV, and you do it for real. Good stuff, man. We really appreciate you hopping on. All right.
Well, we'll find out if you really appreciate it or not, won't we, Dan?
I appreciate it. I know Sean does. Our producer, Bob, does. It's really up to the listeners now.
Gary, I know what you mean, and the first beverage is on me next time I see you.
That's not what I mean. Talk to you guys soon.
Great stuff there from Gary, Sean, on a series that, even though game one went the way it did, it's not, I don't think, indicative of exactly how the rest of the series goes. I still think Colorado wins it, but I think it's going to be a pretty good series. Before we get out of here, let's talk a little bit about the Boston Bruins and New York Islanders. That one's even up 1-1. as we speak right now, Tuesday evening. Casey Zizekas scored the game winner in overtime. Varlamov gets the start in game two, plays well, 39 saves. I love the way Barry Trotz rotates the goaltenders and the confidence he shows in both goaltenders, Sean. And I think that actually will play well here for the Islanders as they go forward. But who do you like? It's 1-1. Series shifts to Nassau Coliseum. It's a best of five. Who's got the edge? Do you look at?
First of all, they only have one goalie. He's a left-handed Russian goalie.
That's what Barry says. I will start a left-handed Russian goalie.
And he just wears a different jersey. I'm convinced it's the same guy. And he just puts a different jersey on. But who do I think has the advantage? I think Boston has the advantage. I you know, look, they were down 3-1 in game two. They came back. The Islanders shut down the Penguins' first line. They did a number on Sidney Crosby, and he never really got going. They have no answers for Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak, who had a hat trick in the first game, and the suit of the playoffs so far. That's going to be a tough one to beat. I don't know if everybody saw it, but it was a white suit before Memorial Day. That's the little bit of fashion I know, but maybe he got away with it because there was like,
because he walked into painted blue walls.
I think it was blue paisley, if I'm still wearing my fashion hat. But anybody that's seen me out and about outside of this podcast knows that you should not count on me for fashion. I think cargo shorts are the height of fashion.
Yeah.
But sharp suit, 3 goals, and they just have no answer for him. Now, here's the wrinkle, and I've never seen this happen before. You're watching the game last night, and Tuukka, he's a little slow to get up here and there. It looks a little uncomfortable. And you're like, I wonder, you know, something's maybe bothering him a little bit. You'll never know because it's the playoffs. Now comes Bruce Cassidy the day after game two. Tuukka's hurt. He's got a bunch of nagging injuries, just like any goalie would at this point, any player. We think he's going to be okay, but if not, we got a perfectly fine backup. And their backup, by the way, is not Halak. It's Jeremy Swayman, who's never played in a playoff game. And just throws it out there. Good, here, digest this, think about this for a little bit. There's no other goalie, there's no other coach in the league that would do that, and if Tuukka Rask isn't 100%, that changes that whole equation. If he's not good enough to be at his best, then I'm not sure who has the advantage. But I thought Tuukka was good enough to win the game last night, and if it wasn't for the most unfortunate of bounces I've seen in a long time in overtime, you know, there's a good chance the Bruins could have won that game and been up 2-0. So I like the Bruins in the series. I think the matchups favor them.
I don't know if what Cassidy said about Tuukka is honesty, gamesmanship, or somewhere in between, right? Like, I'm not going to say he's lying to us. Why would he lie to us and say Tuca's hurt? But anyway, until Tuca's out of the net, I'm picking the Bruins in this series. Like, he's the ultimate playoff type goalie for a series like this. And you're right. They have no answer for that line, the perfection line. And you saw it in the third period as well in game two. The Islanders are a team that has to give everything they possibly have to beat the Bruins. The Bruins have to throw their first line out and beat them. That's, to me, the difference in this series. So I think, as I picked it, and don't believe me because I went 3-5 in the first round, but I got Boston in this series. And I just think they're that first line is going to be too much. Barry Trotz said it. He goes, the Pittsburgh Penguins have a great player and two good players on their first line or something along those lines. It's three great players on the Bruins top line. So I see it playing out with Boston. I see it playing out, Sean, with Vegas. I see it playing out with Carolina. And I think I see it playing out with Winnipeg, too. That's going to be my final four right there.
Well, there you go. And that's a good one. By the way, just so you know, we're both going against the Islander Army here, and there's probably going to be some retribution from whoever listens.
Always.
I got a tweet this week from Big House 328 referencing the power rankings we did after free agency. I did not have the Islanders in those power rankings. I think they were 17 or 18. The dude tweeted me this week and was like, I've been waiting 8 months for you to say that you were wrong. Say it. I'm like, dude, I can't remember. I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, but if you remember that I slighted the Islanders 8 months ago, I'm happy to do it. So I don't know. I don't know if Steve, a.k.a. Big House 328, listens to the show. But if he does, now not only has he gotten it on Twitter, he's gotten it live on the podcast. So we have angered the Islander army again, and we will pay for it at some point. But there's a long way to go before that. We got almost 2 weeks of games, and it should be fantastic.
Yeah, it'll be good stuff, and we'll be back with it next week, and we might have some teams moving on by the time you hear from us again. So until then, everybody, enjoy the hockey.